What's up, guys? This is Tyler Lawrence Gray, and you're listening to Wolfpack on Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. Not a Teen Wolf spinoff.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, episode number 159. This week, we are talking about Wolfpack Season 1, Episode 2, Two Bitten, Two Born. My name is Karen, and I am joined by Natalie, as always.
Hello, I am. I am here.
I am also here, and that's as good as it's going to get today. Guys, we have been so busy between the Teen Wolf movie and Wolfpack, let alone, like, Natalie's got Kung Fu stuff going on, I've got Percy Jackson stuff going on, and, like, a million other things. It's just, we really decided, hey, let's just jump in to the deep end in 2023.
Well, it's like all shows are here now, and then probably like between March and April there's going to be like nothing, like as in, like, because it's going to be this dead zone, which is like annoying, but it's like stretch it out guys. But it's a lot, but here we are on Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, podcasting for the wolf teens.
Yes, and it's a good thing for you because you can go to Subjectify Media and find coverage of a lot of cool different things, and 2023 is shaping up to be a pretty cool year for us. I'm really excited. I've got some things in the works for Prophecy Radio and my Percy Jackson stuff, kind of getting the ball rolling on some of that. So I'm really excited to see what comes of it.
I'm keen for you to tell me why I should care about all the Percy Jackson things, though I conceptually care. I have just never got a chance to sit down and concentrate on them. But yeah, it's certainly appealing, and the show's sounding pretty exciting. So I would like to read them before the show.
That would be amazing, and I am here if you need me. I will tell you one thing, one name, Nico D'Angelo, sad boy of your dreams.
Yeah, I've heard, I mean, I've heard it for years. I've heard it for years and years. And you know that, well, the co-writer of his book, Marcus Shearer, like, I've known him for, like, a decade. Like, like, we're not in that much contact anymore. I've known him for a very, very long time, since he was on Mark Reed's. Like, we used to communicate. What a couple of the Mark Reed suggestions that he ended up doing were things that I suggested. Like, this is, like, going way back onto the internet. So I am really interested, actually. Like, if you said, oh, Natalie Fisher, and he'd be like, oh, yeah, I used to know her. Like, I knew him before he was doing it as a job. Like, when he was, like, you know, when he had other jobs and stuff.
I'm
like
pretty
that.
Sure that's the reason why I know who he is, like, is because of you. And
well,
then our friend Courtney
also
kind of knows him, so
it's exciting to think that this is gonna be kicking off with Percy Jackson. We love mythology, so there's so many, like, you know, subcategories there that I'm sure you're covering on Prophecy Radio, like the reality of various mythologies that the books have covered, so that's fun.
It is fun. But today we're going to be talking about werewolf mythology, because I do have some questions thanks to this episode. If you guys are enjoying Not Another Teen Wolf podcast coming back, if you're enjoying Wolfpack, if you have things to say about the Teen Wolf movie, please get into contact with us. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at NATW Podcast. You can visit our Tumblr, which is notanotherteenwolfpodcast.tumblr.com. And you can always email us, natwpodcast@gmail.com. If you've got a lot of things to say, we will read them, and we would love to have some more feedback to talk about at the end of our episodes. This week, however, we are doing Wolfpack Season 1, Episode 2, Two Bitten, Two Born, and the start of this episode, we pick up right where we left off. We're in the middle of the woods, mm-hmm. Harlan and Luna on one side, Blake and Everett on the other. And Blake is freaking out. Like, she does not like the word werewolf. She's like, nope, I'm out of here. And she runs away and everybody's chasing after her until she quite literally runs into one of the firefighters. And then we get the ranger that we saw before, Ranger Prisha Ahmad, who kind of picks her up off the ground and tells them that they all have to go home. This scene is basically just sort of like a transition, but Blake's line of like, I'm not as good of a liar as he is, really made me laugh.
It was so funny. I mean, that's really setting up something. With the other ranger, Prisha, I really liked this dynamic, actually, like kind of moving through the episode, get more of her. I really liked her with Harlan and Luna, that, you know, she's sort of not extended family, but she works with their dad and she's known them a long time and she really treats them really practically later in the episode when they're looking to find their dad. And it's just I quite like this character. I'm just gonna point that out now. She's already kind of a favorite of mine.
I really like her too, and I have something to say about actually what you were just talking about a little bit later when we do get to that scene. But what I thought was interesting about this scene too was, like, you can tell that these kids are, like, not on the same page yet. You know how sometimes you kind of just get characters who are like, yeah, we totally all agree to, like, lie about this so that the adult doesn't know what we did was wrong. Like, in this scene, they're trying, but they're just, they're all a mess.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. Yeah, it's really, like, chaotic. It's not, like, I think one of the things I like about this show, like, it's very easy to say, it's like, oh, it's natural. Mm-hmm. But, like, it feels natural in its chaoticness, in terms of, like, it's kind of blunt and awkward and, like, you know, it's not performed. Like, the things that are happening are, like, not choreographed, if you know what I mean. Not kind of in that way. Like, it feels more like what you said, like these people are just making a mess of themselves as opposed to a convenient smoothness. Yeah. And that's an interesting tone for me in this show that just feels more like, it just feels messy. And I don't mean that as an insult to, like, the writing or the production. Do you know what I mean?
I think it feels real. Like, that's the best way that I can put it.
There's a tone that, like, you're watching something that's on TV and it's fiction. Sometimes that's a really thick filter you're watching it through. Mm-hmm. And did I say this last week? I may have even said this last week. It's a really thick filter and, you know, something's very artificial, what you're watching. Whereas this feels much more real. Like, it's a stupid word to keep coming back to, but it just feels tonally more in the room and, like, less of that filter. I don't know. It's, I feel like I said this last week, but never mind.
Well, you kind of did, because you're talking about how some shows feel like a documentary.
Like a document.
Definitely falls into that category. And I think a lot of it goes back to the characters, because, like, again, don't want to keep comparing things to Teen Wolf, but it's, like, the closest thing we have. I think on Teen Wolf, and this is also not an insult, a lot of those characters are caricatures. You have the jock, you have, you know, the, like, the popular girl, you have the nerdy guy and all that kind of stuff. And it works. Like, they all kind of fit in a box. Whereas this, even though Harlan is the guy who goes to the gym, like, he's a little bit more complex than that. And, like, Everett might be kind of a nerd, but he's also kind of smooth when he wants to be. And, like, they're all really three-dimensional, and I think that already we're seeing really layered, nuanced characters, and that lends itself to, like, the reality of what we're actually watching.
Yeah, it's just going to be something that, you know, is appealing to certain people maybe who weren't into Teen Wolf being more comedic, but more of a performed show.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It really is. Like, I'm not currently watching a ton of stuff that feels very in the moment. Like, I have done, but I feel like of everything I'm currently watching, I don't watch a lot of those kind of gritty dramas that actually do have a very thin lens between the audience and the show.
Mm-hmm.
The dirty kind of dramas, and this one is. So it's really interesting to me. But
I like it a lot. So the kids do end up heading home, and we have Luna and Harlan in the front seat and Everett and Blake in the back. Luna's driving, and Luna just wants to know everything. She is so interested in what happened to them, if they were bitten, all that kind of stuff. And Harlan doesn't want to talk about it at all. Like, he completely shuts it down. He blasts the music. They almost get into a car crash because of this. And I just had to ask really quickly, like, the ranger was following them the entire time. Did she just see them almost die and, like, not say anything?
I don't
know. Or was she just not behind them in this moment?
Look, maybe she trusted Luna to actually do maybe what she was told. But she was there by the time they dropped off Everett to supervise him. I want to say I am already so curious about Luna and Everett's past, because they don't, none of the group know each other. We're established that actually the twins are seniors and the others are juniors. So they're a year apart at school. They know each other from seeing each other at school. We've had Luna say, like, you know, Harlan being like, we don't even know them. And Luna says, I know Everett. And Harlan says, when's the last time you hung out? This is an implication that they have a past of, like, something, maybe they were in some extracurricular together, maybe, like, they have a passing awareness of each other, or perhaps they were friends as really small children or something. So I'm personally getting really curious about the existing, like, they all know each other by sight, but there's when they even run into each other in last episode, they call out to each other, like, she's like Everett and he's like Luna. So what's the pre-existing past between Everett and Luna? I'm actually so curious about this right now.
That's a really good question. I'd like to know that too.
Yeah.
We see that Everett's bite is completely gone now. And later we also see that Blake's is gone as well. So there's no bite mark anymore. There's no weird colored veins. There's no redness or anything. Completely smooth, perfectly healed skin. Why do you think all of a sudden that the bite is gone now?
I don't know. I assume because they got together with their pack, or because the, you know, Wolf Daddy called out to them or something. Like, I feel like it's got to do with that whole getting activated, the, you know, drawn against their will, eyes rolling back. We're in active werewolf mode now, but I don't know. Maybe it's just time here. Like, the healing is fast and that's how long it took. So I'm not really sure. But
yeah.
Did you have any ideas?
Not really. I kind of also wondered if it was because, like, they were together now, that maybe, you know, because I'm pretty
stronger
sure,
together kind of situation.
Like, I'm pretty sure that it's, you know, probably all wolves are stronger when they're in a pack. So maybe they heal faster. And that kind of brings us to another point a little bit later on. I'll bring that up in a minute. But basically everyone gets home safely and Everett gets caught by his parents. And I just need to set the record straight that I take back everything that I said last week
about his dad.
Because I, like,
there are no innocent bystanders, Karen. I told you.
I know, you're right. And this was like, okay, so he gets home. His parents are sitting in the dark like creepers, and his mother stands up and walks over to him, and the dad immediately is like, Kendra, we agreed to handle this calmly. So, like, he already knows that, like, some shit's gonna go down. And she slaps him and then basically just walks away.
Looks a little bit shocked that she did it. I will give one note, which is that she's a little bit startled by what she's done.
Yeah.
But not enough to make me feel anything.
And I think that Everett was definitely surprised. So I don't think that this is a common occurrence.
Before, yeah.
But even though, I mean, the slap wasn't even, like, that hard, but it was so disgusting to me.
There was some level of it, because I've seen face slaps in the heat of passion in shows that, and even in life, like that feel less like ugly to me than this one for some reason, that are more like either like shocking or like, you know, this felt violent in a way that there's some face slaps I've seen happened, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Slapping someone's face is meant to be insulting. It's not meant to be particularly damaging.
Right.
It's obviously, you know, sometimes used in a stunning way, like shock or like, it's meant to be a big insult rather than like a totally violent act. you know, she didn't backhand him over the face or punch him or anything, but there was still something about it that felt less like a bratty punishment and more violent to me. I don't know why.
Yeah. And I think you're right about her kind of surprise, because she doesn't say anything. She just walks away. And the look on her face was like, oh yeah, I fucked up, but I'm not going to say that out loud.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to let them
know. Especially with
the way
she handles it later. Like, you know, like, yeah.
And then we get the dad just going up to Everett saying, we'll handle this tomorrow. And like, that is not what you do in this situation.
Yeah.
At all. And
yeah,
like,
this is kind of how I felt that it was going.
Yeah. Like, I didn't want to believe, you know, I want to believe that, you know, there was a good person here, but you're right. There are no innocent bystanders. And I think that he's a coward for not saying something, especially since this is not something happening to him. This is something happening to a child, which to me makes it even worse. So,
yeah. And it happens in a lot of circumstances. You see a lot of media, you see one abusive parent and one who is willing to put up with it or willing to allow the kind of trouble of it to continue because it's too hard, or either they kind of believe it or they, you know, don't want to get hurt themselves. Often it's like women going along with it with their son being abused mm-hmm. by the father. And sometimes there's a bit of a fear element in there. And this being the mum with the dad bystanding, you know, the dad could, like, if it came down to it, physically overpower her against hurting Everett. But he just seems very weak, like, morally.
Yeah. I mean, you have to wonder, like, how much is he a victim and how much is he helping to perpetuate the situation, too?
Yeah.
I wonder if, like, how much more of this story we'll get, or if it's, like, if it's going to be a focus at some point, or if it's just, like, a background thing that Everett has to sort of deal with.
I feel like it'll be some sort of focus, but
yeah,
it's not great.
No, it's really not. Switching over to Blake really quickly, she gets home to the hotel room. She looks in the mirror and she sees fangs, that kind of, you know, the wolf mouth that kind of instantly disappears after she's shocked by them. And she leaves the bathroom and she sees that there's a voicemail on the hotel phone, and she picks it up and the voice only says, "You're not safe." And she kind of slams the receiver down, and then we're done with that. And the thing that really struck me about this scene is that we're getting a lot of really subtle horror cues. You have the flickering lights when she's in the bathroom. The fangs were definitely like a jump scare, like that took me by surprise. The phone's blinking light was to the tune of a heartbeat. And Danny's sitting awake on the end of the bed when she turns around.
I'm like, what is up with him? Like,
this child is so creepy.
I understand that he has autism. I feel like this, they cannot be saying, oh, autistic child is a creepy monster. Like,
no.
But I think there's something else going on with him. Maybe he can sense something about her because it's so creepy. And
yeah.
I don't want to say that, you know, just because he has these atypical behaviors, because it didn't feel like how he was earlier in the show, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
I think he's very important to the story.
I would be interested in him kind of being a bigger part of the show and maybe like being brought in somehow. I mean, he's still a child and he doesn't have the bite or anything like that, but I'd be interested to have him woven into the story throughout the whole series instead of kind of just like a character that she has to take care of or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wanted to say about this was that I really like the subtle way that the show takes every opportunity to unnerve us. Like, it's not just jump scares. It's not just creepy voices on the phone. It's the music and the way they set up shots. Like, this is actually a very scary show. It's a very, like, thrilling show in that every time it sees an opportunity to kind of make us feel off kilter, it takes it. And I really appreciate it about that.
You like the horror element. I kind of accept it.
Yeah. I had a feeling that's how this was going to go.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like, oh, this is exciting to me. It's like, oh, this is upsetting. but yeah. I haven't been too scared yet, but it's mm-hmm. like just not like, I don't know, like working up that kind of fictional suspense in, I've never been like a horror person, like, oh, let's breathe with the anticipation in the movie and then get scared and we know it's a fake scare, so it's okay and we're enjoying it. I don't do that. I don't know. I've never really experienced that. So
yeah,
so we'll see, I guess.
The funny thing is, neither have I. Like, I don't enjoy getting scared. I don't like jump scares at all. Like, I'm a very anxious person, like I said before. And so I'm very jumpy in general. And I do not like it. But, and this is a way bigger topic, but I love horror and I love what horror can say about things. And I love that like psychological thrill you get by being like creeped out more than like scared. And I just think that horror stories can tell really interesting tales that like some other genres can't. I think that's why I like what the show's doing, is because even though, like, you know, her in the fangs, like, that did kind of scare me a little bit, but it wasn't so much that I was like, oh, I have to, like, step away from this right now. It was kind of like, oh, that
if
was
something good... made me have to step away, I would not want to keep watching full yeah. stop, like, to be honest.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. Yeah, but I like it. We also get to see Harlan and Luna arrive home, and the ranger is with them still, and she kind of explains on the map where they think that their dad is and kind of gives him hope that he's okay. She says that she's been through the same training as him. She would be able to survive out there for a week. He'll be able to survive out there. Kind of tells them he would be looking for rocks to climb, something that the fire can't burn. And this is the point that I wanted to bring up that you were kind of talking about before. She seems like really close to this family. It's more than just a coworker, but I'm not getting like any sort of romantic like thing in there with Garrett at all. I think there's quite a big age difference too, but the first time I watched this, I was like, oh, does she know about their secret? Like, the part where she was explaining where on the map she thought he might be made me wonder if she was asking them for advice or, like, showing them where they thought he was so that they could go help find them. And then watching it a second time, I was like, oh, that's not what's going on here.
I wondered this very – I did slightly go to the same place that they're like, oh, is she in the loop? Yeah. I don't think she is from everything mm-hmm. we know about the show. I think she's just treating the kids practically because they've been raised in the forest and they're aware of this lifestyle and everything. I think she's just treating them like people who know the job to a degree because of their father. You know, she's just not patronizing them, and she's just treating them like, here's the information, real talk kind of thing, which I really loved, to be honest. But I did wonder if she knew about them. But then probably not.
Yeah. Yeah. But I do really like this, like, friendship between her and Garrett. Like I said, it's more than just a coworker. Like, I think they actually care about each other. Who knows if they, like, hang out outside of work, but she's at least familiar enough with the kids that she's probably been around for a while and they at least know each other. And, you know, she feels like she can walk into their house and just be like, yeah, this is where we think your dad is, and treats them like adults, you know, doesn't treat them like kids who shouldn't know this information.
Yeah.
So I loved that a lot. So Luna thinks their actual dad, she says, bit Everett and Blake. And Harlan specifically says they don't know what happens when a person is bitten versus born. And he kind of says they don't really know anything about werewolves. He also says that he's never healed as fast as Everett did. And also here specifically says that Garrett is the only one who knows about them. So that kind of confirms that the ranger is not in the loop. But I thought it was so interesting that they're like, yeah, we might be born werewolves, but it seems like they've never come across another werewolf before. And they really have no idea how it all works.
Yeah, they're kind of just winging it. They're like, oh, we know that we can transform into this. We assume this is the best name for what we are with our claws and eyes and stuff. We know that we've been like this forever and that we at least shifted into wolf puppies when we were baby. We don't know if they can still run around as proper wolves now. It's actually a really great question. Like, if these people are born hereditary this is their species. You know, Teen Wolf, pretty much you, when someone was bitten, you ended up with pretty much the same kind of werewolf. Like, you could be that, you know, obviously you didn't grow up in it. You might not know, like, the kind of instinctual things that some of the born werewolves do, but it didn't really change your powers. That being said, we still never found out on Teen Wolf, like, if you become a werewolf by the bite and then you have a baby, is that, like, permanently altered your DNA? Will you then have werewolf babies, or is it you still have human DNA in your reproductive needs? With this totally new law, there is every reason to believe that the bite could create some sort of mutated bad version or something like that, you know?
Right.
It's not a bad question, and it's just not one I've thought about before. But them actually saying that, being like, we don't know if that's, like, even the same thing. It's like, we don't know if that's the same thing. Like, right. That's true. We don't. Like, I never didn't really think about it before.
Yeah. I mean, there's this kind of common ground between a lot of werewolf lore, but the truth of the matter is they could go in any direction with this. And until we have more information, we simply, you know, we can guess, but we're never really going to know what kind of difference it is. And with the episode being called, you know, Two Bitten, Two Born, it is making a distinction between the two. And so I'm very interested to see if there will be a difference in how that'll play out for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
So later that night, everybody's trying to go to sleep. Everett tries to sleep, but he can hear, like, every little sound, and it seems to be triggering his anxiety. And he kind of has maybe, like, OCD tendencies because he's, like, straightening everything on his desk. He tries to do his yoga breathing and it's not really working. And we had previously wondered if the bite would make his anxiety go away, but I'm really glad that it hasn't. We talked about not wanting it to, but it it actually seems to be making it worse, which I find really interesting. And I think it makes sense because when you're anxious, you're already, like, hypersensitive to loud noises, to too much stimulation. And so the werewolf powers enhancing your hearing and your senses in that way would only heighten that. So I can understand why it would actually trigger his anxiety even worse. Plus, he's probably terrified.
Yeah. I mean, dogs get anxiety.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I didn't think it was going to make it go, but he is having a rough time. So,
yeah.
Certainly, I think using those enhanced senses in the show to show us close up, I guess, what the panic attack feels like for him, or when he is being anxious, just like having it build via heightened senses, I guess it's like kind of like being inside the head of, like, someone not a werewolf. It's like a way of basically amping up the level of input that he's getting to a way that it feels like for a person getting overwhelmed, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think that makes total sense.
But he's really hearing it louder because of this whole situation.
Yeah, it's a lot. And Blake seems to be having trouble sleeping too, but she dreams of being in bed with Everett. And I couldn't tell if this was just Blake's dream or if Everett was having it too.
I felt like they were both having it. I might be wrong. I felt like they were both having it. It's kind of, like, intense, like, straight off the bat, this level of potential romance between them. Like, do you like that? Like, you know, we had last episode, like, kind of a moment. They're really being like, this is happening, this is on.
Yeah.
Immediately.
I mean, because it's so immediate, like, I can't imagine it's really going to last, but I am interested in where it's going to go and, like, what's going to end up happening, because I don't know. I just kind of feel like, okay, if this is happening so soon, then there's no buildup to, like, or maybe there will be, maybe, you know, they'll hook up really fast, but there's no, like, actual relationship between them and you build toward that. Or maybe this is just heightened senses, heightened sexual drive. They want to hook up, but there's really nothing between them.
I don't know. I've got a feeling Luna's coming into it. I've got a feeling that it's might be a bit of a love triangle. Like, Luna wants to claim Everett as her, you know, pack daddy or whatever.
Oh, God. We're going to have have to start keeping track of how many times we say daddy on this podcast.
Okay, carrying on. I don't know. I might be wrong. Apparently, yeah, there's a lot of romance in the show, so
yeah. Okay. I'm interested to see where it goes. One person who is not experiencing any romance at the moment is Garrett, who is running through the woods, and he's sort of like, he's hearing growling around him, but we can't really tell if it's like real or imagined, because later we think it's real, but it's actually the helicopter and stuff like that. But I was just wondering in this moment, like, is there a reason why the monster would potentially want to keep him alive? I mean, if he's out in the middle of the woods, maybe the monster can't get to him because he's surrounded by fire, but if he can, he clearly is not trying to kill him.
Maybe so, he's grateful
for him taking care of his kids.
Yeah.
maybe
like I said, I feel like there's also more than one monster at play in some way, like whether we've got a werewolf that is actually the one doing badness, or if we have to divide the monster that's chasing people, the one that was in the last episode at Blake's house.
Mm-hmm.
We do not know that this is the same monster / werewolf thing that bit them.
Correct.
We do not know that for 100% sure. It could be that there is a nice werewolf who just looks like a coyote or something who bit them in the fray. And this big monster who is like a fire demon or something, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we do not know. It could be that there's a nice werewolf daddy biting people so that his kids have more friends to fight the fire demon.
Aw.
And he's grateful to Keanu Daddy for being such good help. It's possible.
It is possible. I like the idea of him making more babies to fight the fire wolf demon thing. Yeah, that's interesting.
We just don't know. That's the thing. We keep talking about the monster and its intentions. I don't think there's just one. And we just have to be clear on the fact that we actually don't know if the biter is the same person that chased, or same thing that chased Everett and Blake in the first episode.
Yeah. Again, we're just waiting for more puzzle pieces to land on the table so that we can keep putting this picture together. And until we get it, I think that it's just all going to be conjecture. So we'll just have to see. But Blake and Everett both sleep through the entire, like, next day and into the next, because his mom specifically says, like, you didn't come out of your room all day. And then her dad was like, oh, you're actually up today, like, you're alive. So they slept for a very long time. And they both ended up shoving dressers in front of their doors, which really made me laugh, because, like, they saw what that monster could do. Did they really think that a dresser would stop it?
Look, they've just got to, they got to do what they got to do. Yeah. They can only do something, you know?
Yeah. And, I mean, if it made them feel more comfortable and allowed them to sleep, then that's fine. But it was funny. So we learned that Blake's dad has missed too many payments, and now they don't have insurance, health insurance, I'm assuming. And
no, I think on the house, the house insurance from the, because the house was, right. It's not like it was like a burning pile of sticks, but like fire blew through it and like all the smoke damage and stuff like that, you know?
Right.
It wasn't totally destroyed, but it's got all of that smoke damage on the inside.
Yeah. I just assumed it was health insurance because, like, the health insurance in America sucks, and it's like,
it could be as well, but yeah. I definitely thought he was talking about insurance on the house. Yeah,
I think you're right. And so in that case, they have no house. They have nowhere to live. They're living out of this motel room until they can find somewhere else. So, yeah, that really sucks. The dad also kind of notices her clear skin. Danny has to kind of point it out to him, but he notices it. And he says, yeah, she's always been pretty and stuff. And I feel like he's trying, but I'm still just not, like, super empathetic toward this guy.
I mean, he's the best parent we've met on the show. Well, no, Garrett is. But, you know, in the list of parents we've met on the show, he's in the top half.
Yeah. That's awful, Natalie. That's awful.
Just saying.
Wow.
He's kind of harsh, but he's not that bad compared to Everett's parents.
Yeah. And speaking of his mom, again, this part, like, if I thought the other part was disgusting, this one maybe made it worse because she does not apologize for slapping him. She literally says, "Yesterday was hard. I'm past it. We need to move forward, all right?"
Yeah. Yeah. It's that, like that kind of language is very textbook. Like, yeah. It's very, yeah.
I was like, you hit your kid and you're like, oh, you don't have to feel bad. I've moved past it. So everything's fine now.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't surprise me, but it's pretty intense.
It is.
It's kind of a tough look at that kind of behavior.
Yeah, for sure. And then she tells him that the arson investigator is there.
Yeah. And I feel like that's also why. It's like she's kind of like, she comes to him and she was like, yesterday was hard. I'm over it. We're not going to fight anymore because that arson investigator is here and you need to go and behave. Like, that's very much the, I'm not going to keep picking a fight with you because I need you to shut up and make sure this family doesn't get in trouble.
Yeah. That's the vibe I kind of got too. And I felt like if the arson investigator hadn't been there, like, she probably would have been harder kept on going. Him.
Yeah.
So I just want to say that I feel like this show knows that they've got Sarah Michelle Gellar on it. Like, this show is not pretending not to be excited about the fact that Buffy the Vampire Slayer is here, because all of her like reveals at the episodes, like the way that she's first introduced in the episode, feels very purposeful and very exciting and shocking. Like, oh, the camera pans over and there she is. And even the way they just frame her always feels so dramatic to me.
This part is maybe, she's maybe the one person who we don't feel like we're in a documentary with.
Yeah.
We're like, it's Sarah, you know, like, it's definitely, they make her very atmospheric. Maybe.
Yeah, I feel like out of everyone, yeah, she has the most like pizzazz. And I feel like that's part of it, is like, she's also trying to be overly friendly to these kids. She's kind of got this air about her where she's putting on a little bit of a performance because she's trying to investigate what's going on. I think that's the thing, is like, she is performing in a way that the kids aren't, because, but I think it's like part of her character. It's very intentional on Kristen, the character's part, because she's like, yeah, I need them to like me, to trust me, because I have to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, I think that's actually a pretty fair assessment, that she's being performative inside of the reality. So
yeah,
it's very layered in that obviously she suspects Everett. She obviously knows that it might not be him. She obviously knows that if she outright treats him like a suspect, that she won't get as much out of him. But she also knows that a little bit of pressure that he might be would be more reason for him to give information if he wasn't. Like, it's all very, like, she's done this so many times. She's, like, played children so many times before, basically.
She, like, feels like an expert.
She's, like, manipulative. Yeah, it's manipulative, like, at, you know, which obviously detectives and stuff like that, that's part of the investigation element.
Yeah. Yeah, you can tell that she's an expert. She's done this plenty of times before. I like her character because she's personable. She's more personable than, you know, her LAPD partner. And she's very smart. And that combination probably makes her very good at her job. But yeah, I really like that she was like, I hope you're not the arsonist. But she also doesn't pretend like he's not a suspect.
Yeah, she says, you know, do you think it was me? And she's like, I hope not. Like, it's a very honest answer in a way, like, as opposed to like, no, I don't think it was you or whatever. But like, she's like, you know, you seem nice. I hope it's not you.
Yeah.
And that's that's as honest as you can be in that situation, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. So moving on to later that day, we go back to Everett. This is after he's talked to her and presumably like she hasn't gotten any information from her or anything.
Yeah. Did you find it odd that we don't actually see them having their big chat?
Kind of. I actually found it more, I found it stranger that we didn't see Blake and her have a conversation at all. Like, we got the introduction, but that was it. It cut off.
I feel like this is like, I feel like the show is cutting big chunks. Like, obviously we missed when they got the bite and stuff. I feel like that's not just like, oh, we don't need to show it. I feel like maybe it's going to loop back. And like, I think that, you know, maybe we'll get something where we loop, where they loop back and we hear people's conflicting stories or something like that later.
You know what? Given what they did with the bite, I feel like that is possible.
Yeah. I don't know.
Because we'll have the to show, see. That's what I was kind of saying last week, is like, I don't think the show wants us to be able to put anything together yet. Like, it's purposely keeping us in the dark.
I think actually skimming over those big scenes is intentional.
Yeah.
And I assume we will come back to it in some way.
Interesting. But we do find out that Everett's grounded, which is probably not surprising. And he's currently studying with Connor, who shows him that he also received a bite, but it hasn't healed and he hasn't got any weird phone calls. So why is Connor's bite different? Why isn't he getting phone calls up until this point?
I mean, at this point, you could just say maybe it was just some random animal, like a mountain lion, not that came out in the flood of animals rather than a magical animal. But later we know that to be not true.
Right.
So taking into account that we know that it is a weird bite, why it didn't activate straight away is absolutely fucking no idea. Like, I was not prepared in any single sense of the word for there to be more kids who were bitten than this kid. We obviously know something was a bit weird from the trailer with the other boy getting sucked into the cloud, and then we see later in the trailer that he's looking at mystery stuff. Like, we know that he vanished and he comes back. We know that there are some other kids who've got like stuff surrounding this, but I was not prepared for more werewolves than the core four or whatever these things are. Like, that there are other kids now. It's not just these four, that there are other kids who have gotten some sort of bite. Not ready for it at all. Not a single bit. Were you shocked?
I was like, oh, he's probably going to have like, well, I guess when he went to lift his shirt, I really wasn't sure what I was expecting, because he specifically said he was bitten, but it also did kind of look like a dog bite. Like he said, like it had the big canines and stuff like that. And then especially later when he starts having symptoms and stuff, I was like, what the fuck is happening here? It was really confusing.
Yeah, I do not have a clue. It was just not something that I was expecting at all.
Yeah. Well, Luna wants more information, just like we want more information, and Harlan just does not care. But she also wants to go look for Garrett, but Harlan takes the keys from her and goes to the gym, which was like a dick move, but also kind of a very brotherly move. You know, just the way that she like knew that he was going to go for the keys and then she tried to grab him first. Like, it felt like siblings there, which I really liked that part. But while Harlan is at the gym, he's working out and the music in his headphones spikes and it hurts his ears. Like, he really can't stand it. It's too loud for him. And we already know he has super sensitive hearing. And then he keeps having daydreams about that guy in the yellow tank top. And they're all sexual fantasies where he basically loses control and wolfs out. Like, he doesn't hurt him in the fantasies, but his teeth are there. He can kind of see his teeth and the reflection of the bar in reality as well. And it throws him off enough that he doesn't even try to flirt or hook up with the guy, which we already know enough about Harlan that this is like a major red flag.
Well, for me, it felt like that his definitely to do with that lack of control. Like, he's getting turned on or getting overwhelmed with hormones, and those things are spiking his control.
Yeah.
So, it definitely seems like it related, like, oh, that guy's hot. Oh, I can't help thinking about him. Oh, thinking about him is making me wolf out. Oh, this is a really bad situation. So now I'm really stressed. I'm going to stand here with a stunned look on my face when he tries to talk to me.
Yeah.
I felt he was very vulnerable in this moment. Honestly, when he, there's a shot of his face, like right at the end, when after the guy kind of talks to him and he's like, "You're Harlan, right?" And he's kind of left, like he's got the dumbbell and he's kind of left and he's got this really like wound up look on his face that looks really like, I felt very sorry for him. And I feel like he's someone who is like actually more than anyone else to me. And I might be like projecting or fantasizing here, but it feels like to me that he is keen for romantic love in some way. Mm-hmm. Like he has, you know, obviously sexual drive, but I think that we don't know who this guy is. We don't know if this is a guy that he's had a crush on for a long time. We don't know if this guy's going to be back, you know? We don't know anything about who the guy in the yellow singlet is and whether he is going to be someone important. This is a guy, or if this is a guy, it could be any guy. It feels like Harlan has a lot of feelings, basically.
Yeah.
And I feel like that his feelings might sway towards a very deep, intense romantic drive. Mm-hmm. And actually more than Blake or Everett or Luna, that he's like really like, I don't know, needy romantically or something. Like he doesn't want a connection with his family. He wants a partner or something like that.
Right.
But I don't know. That could be so wrong. This guy could be no one. I got the impression this is a guy he's liked for a long time though.
I'm not really sure. I think your point about him being very vulnerable in this moment is so true, because every time we've seen him up until this point, he's been kind of an asshole and he's definitely wearing a mask. Like he's either getting what he wants from the DJ guy at the rave, or he's annoying his sister, defying her, kind of being a brat about his dad, or shutting down and not wanting anything to do with Everett and Blake. This is the first time that he has nothing to say and that he's not trying to, I don't want to say manipulate, because that feels like a little grosser than what I mean, but like he's not trying to get something out of this guy. He just walks away. And that was kind of surprising to me.
Yeah, he's obviously very different inside his own head or in private than he is like elsewhere. I mean, so is everyone, but like it's very clear that he's lonely in his own way, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. During this sequence, we also get a flashback with Keanu Daddy, who is Garrett, obviously. So Garrett's on the phone talking to someone. I was wondering, like, who it could possibly be, if it was the ranger, like if she was around at this point.
Or... yeah, someone else at work, I assume, reporting on his, like what kind of work he's been doing in the fire cleanup.
Yeah. And so he's basically talking to someone about how he found two black cubs at the fire line, specifically not gray, black cubs with no sign of the parents or the rest of the pack. So again,
so we know she wasn't. We know they weren't found with a dead mother. This is the big thing. We know it's got to be the mum. The werewolf is the mother. Like the reason they're going on about why it's their father is because it's actually their mother. It's a very obvious trick to me. Like maybe I'm wrong, but like the fact that they're focusing on father, it's probably because father is the only parent that they've ever known. They don't have any perspective on a mother. Maybe the reason that they're saying father, 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 father is because to them that's all they have as a parent. That's the only.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the automatic go-to for them. But I think that it's got to be the mother, but we'll see. Like, I feel like there's a few reasons for that focus, and one of them is like, oh, you thought it was the father. Actually, it's the mother, which would be like very simplistic, but I think it's more that it being their mother means that, like, if this is a good wolf, there could be a positive relationship there that doesn't take away from Garrett being their father as well.
Right.
So there's that.
This also brings up another question about his dating life. Does he not have a partner at all because he was raising werewolf puppies/kids? You know, like, not that I think that he would ever put that blame on the kids at all, but I wonder how much raising them has affected like his dating life and the fact that maybe they don't have a mother figure because he just couldn't possibly trust anybody else with this information.
Yeah, I feel like it's nothing. I feel like it's absolutely not going to be, that's not on the cards for him.
Yeah. He's got too much to deal with.
In fact, he brings him in a laundry basket and they turn into human babies.
I would have shit my pants.
I mean, yeah, okay, it's freaking weird and we didn't see how he responded to that. But my question is all like, what about the person he reported finding two wolf cubs to? Because the wolf cubs would need to be raised and re-released. Would he just be like, oh, they died or something? Like, you know, like, yeah, like, oh, what happened to those wolf cubs? We need to get them into a sanctuary to make sure that they grow up wild or again or whatever. Like,
right.
And then, you know, he's like, oh, yeah, they died. I found these babies, though.
yeah, that's true. Isn't that strange? Don't put two and two together. Yeah, that's really interesting. I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
The last part of this kind of sequence, we already sort of touched on with the arson investigator showing up to talk to Blake, and we don't actually get that scene. But the part that I found interesting is that she's having Danny time her running around the motel where they're staying, and she is not fast. And so that made me wonder if her power only works at nighttime, because the two times we saw her running fast, it was at night.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because with that whole let's time her, and she took off, right? And I was like, that doesn't look that fast. It looks like she's trying really hard like a normal person. And I was like, are we meant to think this is fast? And then Danny's like, you are not fast. And I died. This was, to me, the funniest part of the show so far. Yeah. It's actually really weird because it's not like, I guess we see Harlan's senses going a bit funny, but it's not like his hearing is like less good, or maybe like his hearing during the day is usually normal human hearing. And what we're seeing in the gym is him getting amped up the way it would on a full moon at night. Like, you know, maybe it's unexpected that he's having any of his powers kicking during the day at all.
Mm.
And that's what it's about.
That's true. It could have taken him by surprise because of that. Yeah, that's interesting.
I have no idea what it means that she can't run. It's not a single clue. I just found it very hilarious.
Yeah. Okay, so transitioning to the last part of this episode, which is basically nighttime, where everything kind of starts coming together and some real shit starts going down. Basically, all four of the kids can feel the pull of the full moon rising, and even Luna's struggling. Like, we see Luna here. We saw Harlan earlier during the day, but like Luna, who's been through this many times before, seems to be freaking out, and Harlan's obviously freaking out, and so they don't really know what's going on. And she ends up seeing a white horse kicking down her door. So
why?
First of all, is this horse daddy? Is this what?
Yeah, obviously, like, come on, Karen.
So, like, we've seen the ram.
Maybe it's a horse mama. I'm not sure.
Maybe. Yeah. Horse mommy. But we saw the ram, which seemed to be at least somewhat of a figment of Everett's imagination, at least in the hospital. And the horse very clearly is too, because she kind of bears her fangs and then it just like disappears. It's not even that it just goes away. It's like the door didn't get kicked down. Everything's back to normal. So what do you kind of make of this, and how do you think it's related to the ram?
I don't fucking know. But it is this animal spirit, this spirit of the land thing, I swear to God. Like, it's like maybe the werewolves are meant to protect the land from people who want to destroy the land, like arsonists, like, right? Like the werewolves are the spiritual protectors, or like the natural protectors of like the American earth, like that they're tied into the makeup of the natural ecosystem of this land, right? Just go with me on this.
Okay.
And their role is to protect the land from those who would hurt it. The werewolves are like guardians of the land, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they have different maybe other animal guides, like the bighorn sheep and the wild horse and stuff like that. And they all have like kind of, I hesitate to use like Native American language for this, like totems. Right. We don't know if this is going to be a Native American kind of myth, but they all have some connection to like the spirit of the land. Like maybe that horse is like the horse god spirit of the wild horses of America and the ram, etc., like, or of California. And the werewolf's job is to protect the land from people who would hurt it, like the arsonist. And so Luna and Harlan and their parent were that kind of werewolf. And they are there to help the land survive. And perhaps when damage is done to a land like a fire, it creates a fire demon. And that's like the warped version of the werewolf monster that we saw.
Okay. I mean, I kind of like that idea, yeah.
And now, and like, you know, like the good werewolves are there to protect the land just from harm, and also from the fact that like if something destructive happens, out of the destructive comes some sort of like bad spirits. So good werewolf is making more good werewolves to create a good werewolf army to stop humans fucking with the land, which will cause big monsters to come. That is my theory so far. The ram, the horse and stuff are all like spirit gods of the native animals who are like also a part of the whole like, they're like, oh, Luna, protect us, please. Or I'm kind of like, hey, Luna, door. Do your job.
Yeah. I think it's the second one. That's the vibe I'm getting.
Yeah. Maybe the first one, the ram, might have been like, oh, Everett, please. Yeah. I am in such pain. But yeah. What do you think of my theory?
I actually really like it. I think that if this is the direction the show is going to go in, it's very different because then it's more than just a show about werewolves. You know, you're bringing other kind of like beings into it, like something that we don't really see a whole lot, like that the land actually has a spirit sort of god or something associated with it. I find that very interesting. I really love things about like environmentalism and conservation and stuff like that. So this would be right up my alley. And I think that in the way that the Hales and stuff were like the protectors of Beacon Hills and Teen Wolf, I really like the idea that like, oh, werewolves, which are usually monstrous creatures, are actually the protectors of this area. It's a kind of a twist on that legend.
Yeah, I think that I do feel like the protector thing is big. I don't know why, but that's what I'm getting. If that is what we can kind of assume, I mean, that is what I'm going to be assuming now. It might be totally something different, but this is where I'm at. This is where I'm heading. I'm heading protectors of the land, spirits of the native creatures. A secondary monster is a destructive creature that comes from destruction of the land. Werewolves are activated in a fire because they know that the destruction creature is coming.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
I don't know if my theories are any good, but they feel good.
They feel good to me too. I like them. Mm-hmm. So switching over to Blake, Everett comes over to her motel room and she kind of leaves to get them a couple of bottles of water. And when she returns, Everett is sitting down next to Danny and Danny is showing him his like little fidget toy. And he's good with Danny. Like Blake says, you know, he doesn't talk to strangers. He doesn't touch strangers. Like this is definitely a very weird thing. And I really loved this moment. It was like super cute. And
yeah, it was interesting that Danny was immediately so fine with Everett and like, oh, you know, treating him like he's family, mm-hmm. you know, because he belongs to Blake, maybe.
Yeah.
Or just because he vibes his energy.
And that's what I was going to say is like maybe the anxiety, you know, like he was talking about how he would really need a fidget toy like that. And maybe he just kind of sees a little bit of himself in Everett in that way. Yeah. But you could see that Blake like likes this, you know, like it makes her happy.
She's quite shocked, but then she's like, oh yeah, okay, this could be, Yep.
Yeah. I mean, this is important to her. Danny's really important to her. And the fact that Everett immediately gets along with him, that Danny's immediately okay with them, with him, probably means a lot. And you could see as they go outside and they're standing under the full moon that things get a little awkward, but a little flirty, and it's cute, and Everett's kind of a disaster. And I thought like the tension here was really good and I really liked it. But the part that really stuck out to me was that he said that she looks perfect and that it's more than just her skin. Like that was her assumption to begin with. That it was because of her skin. He says, yes, but no, it's more than that. And I got this like faded mates kind of vibe going on.
I feel like that if it's that, you're going to hate that. I feel like if that is it, like as in like you're my destined mate kind of situation, that you, Karen, will hate that kind of storytelling.
I mean, it depends. I think that that kind of story can do well, but also like they're teenagers too, and that feels a little strange to me. I don't know. Like you could just tell that. Like I feel like between her dream and this, and some of the other things, like these two are very clearly drawn to each other in a way that like. Maybe it's because they were bit by the same creature, but it feels like there's a sexual tension underneath that.
Yeah, there's definitely something. I assume we'll discover what. There is definitely a like drawn togetherness going on. Yeah.
Yeah. So Connor at this point calls them from the hospital. He's terrified. He's basically running for his life. So we have to jump back a little bit to talk about this. So Connor goes to the hospital hoping to get his cast off, but the doctor says, nope, you have to leave it on for at least another 3 weeks. You know, it was so funny. Did you fall or anything? He's like, no, but I was running away from a fire. Like, but did you expect me to
he's
do?
He's rebroken it.
And he ends up getting a tetanus shot for his bite and then make a point of saying like, oh yeah, I'm not afraid of needles. Like I don't faint because of needles or anything like that. But then he has some sort of allergic reaction to the tetanus shot and starts like screaming out in pain, saying that it's burning him. He actually like knocks the needle out of the doctor's hands, which really scared me because I thought maybe the needle was going to get stuck in there. And they end up giving him a strong sedative, but it doesn't knock him out. So even though his bite hadn't healed like Everett and Blake's did, clearly something else is going on with this kid.
The whole Connor thing, I'm almost like, I don't know what to say because it was so out of left field for me that I'm just like, what? Like, what? The whole time. Like, I was just like, oh, okay. So this kid's now getting some sort of activation after his tetanus shot. He starts getting the phone calls. Like he basically, Everett was like, you know, do you getting any phone calls? And he was like, no, what? And he says, tell me if you do. And then he does get a scary phone call as well. And he was like, oh, and just thinking about like, oh my God, this is what Everett was talking about kind of thing. Like, it's like so weird.
It is super weird. And the phone call he gets, I felt like was different than the other phone calls because he gets a phone call telling him to run. And it's kind of putting these paranoid thoughts into his head that the doctors want to keep him in the hospital, that they want to trap him there. This is the first time I got the sense that these phone calls are like to cause chaos, not to warn or help him. And I don't know if like there's a different person on the phone than before, even though it sounded fairly the same. I got a totally different vibe from this phone call than I did with the other one.
I mean, it could be that the other two are like valued by the phone call person and this guy is like a big mistake that he doesn't actually want.
Yeah.
Hence not activating his bite or whatever.
That's true. Delayed activation.
I don't know.
What does that mean?
It's very weird. Very weird.
Yeah. But Connor ends up listening to the voice on the phone and he runs for his life and he gets attacked by the monster. And I have to say, I already know your reaction to this, but I have to say the part where he has to break his cast.
Yeah.
It was horrific. And watching it a second time, I couldn't. I had to look away.
Yeah. I thought he was going to fucking cut his leg off or something. Like, it was, yeah, it was pretty horrific. And we think this is the same monster from the smoke, from the smokehouse, from Blake's house.
Yeah, it looked very similar.
We see those corridor shots, and like, he's really getting hunted by this thing.
Yeah.
And again, if this is the biter, or if this is the demon that the werewolves are meant to fight against, like, it's a bit, yeah. So he's definitely weak, I guess. He's a weak one. And yeah, maybe the bite was like, maybe he didn't activate him because they were like, oh, this one's a bit weak. We don't want this one.
That's true. So maybe, because like, where are his abs? Where are his, you know, heightened sense? What's his superpower among superpowers? Like, we don't get any of that. And I wonder if getting the bite is like a chance that you will turn into a werewolf, or a chance that you will become even an elevated werewolf, and Connor didn't elevate and therefore he has to go.
Yeah, maybe it just doesn't take with some people.
Maybe it's literally like survival of the fittest. Well, like, if you can survive until the full moon, then you get to live as a werewolf. If you can't, then...
Well, like, in Teen Wolf, Jackson gets the bite, right? Like, not to like compare. We know the mythology is not comparable. Derek bites Jackson. Jackson does not become a werewolf. He becomes the Canema because of his like traumatic soul.
Right.
You know? He doesn't become a werewolf until like he's sort of healed from his trauma, and he kind of dies and gets reborn again as a werewolf. Though later we find out apparently he can still do a bit of Canema. I don't know. Jackson, I love you. But maybe it just doesn't do the same thing for everyone.
Yeah, I would find that really interesting too. You know, why are Blake and Everett different?
Yeah.
So Everett does end up coming across his cast, but doesn't find a body. And Kristen, the arson investigator, ends up finding him. She already has Blake in the back of the car.
Yeah, I mean,
she has more questions.
Finding Everett in this scene is definitely framed like, this is very suspicious, kid.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Like, yeah. This is like, okay, all right, Everett, enough bullshit. What's going on?
Yeah.
Because he definitely is sort of caught, not in the act, but in an act of some sort, you know, caught in an act.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's funny. So... inside the hospital, Garrett is brought in. And we get Harlan and Luna kind of meeting him there. And the little pinky finger thing between Luna and Garrett was so cute.
I will say, when Harlan is talking to they've texted each other saying, hey, they found Garrett. For all Harlan has behaved so far, he is talking very urgently to the person at the desk when Luna arrives.
Yeah.
He is rushed there and he cares.
Yeah.
So that's nice.
Luna is
obviously very openly caring, but I liked seeing Harlan's urgency when it came down to it with Garrett.
Yeah. And can I also say something else about Luna?
Yeah.
Her name is Elizabeth Briggs. Her name is Elizabeth, which means she chose to call herself Luna, which is another word for moon. She is super into this werewolf thing. Yeah, it makes
so much sense to me because I was looking at them. Harlan and Luna, and I'm like, okay, their names go okay together, but like, what kind of moron gets a werewolf puppy and calls it Luna? Like, come on. Like, what kind of idiot? Like, I'm like, why the like, Garrett does not seem right for Garrett at all. Like, that's very obvious. That's very convenient that she has a werewolf related name.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, like, obviously he knew she was a werewolf, so he could have chosen to give her a werewolf related name. It's not like Remus Lupin of Harry Potter fame, who was a total and utter non-related to any werewolves and already had that name when he got the bite.
Right.
Don't want to talk about that. But her picking Luna makes so much sense to me. Like I kind of accepted that it was her name. This is 10 times better.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, it's so much better.
I
definitely had the same reaction when she said, when they were like Harlan and Elizabeth Briggs and she's like, it's Luna. I was like, oh, girl. Like, oh, girl. Oh, no.
I just can't imagine the shit Harlan probably gave her for so long and probably still does.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really funny. So I really wanted to make sure if people didn't pick up on that,
is definitely what happened. Oh, no, I picked up so hard, but
But basically, yeah, the cops come to talk to them. They're like, but our dad just got here. And he's like, yeah, we still have questions. So
everyone's in trouble.
Yep. And that kind of, you know, will lead to all four of them being questioned in the investigation, especially because they were out in the woods earlier in the episode.
I feel like the next one's got to be like, okay, what's going on with you four? You know, like an actual straight talking, proper grilling of them with Sarah.
Yeah. And that brings us to the end of this episode. And I guess my biggest question at the end of this episode is that it's called Two Bitten, Two Born. But Connor was also bitten. And we know Austin was potentially bitten because he's still alive. Like, he was yanked into the smoke. And then we don't know that for sure, but we can infer that it might be a possibility. Like, is it because he died that, okay, technically there's still only two bitten?
We don't know he died.
I mean, I guess that's true. But I would say there's a higher chance that he died than he didn't.
You don't know that. Maybe he'll come back stronger with three legs. Four. Six legs.
Yeah. That is a show I would not be prepared to watch, but yeah, you're right, though. I mean, we don't know for sure that he is dead, but he was obviously taken by the monster, which cannot be good for him. Unless that thing was like, no, I'm just trying to protect you. Stop running away from me. Why did you break your cast?
I don't know. I truly don't know. I truly do not know what the deal is with him. I feel like he's like kind of listed, that kid is listed as like one of the recurring characters, the actor. So I would expect to see him in another episode. And we know we're going to see Austin in another episode, and he got sucked into the smoke and no one knows where he is. Not that we've had a lot of attention for that yet.
Yeah, I find it very interesting that we don't see him at all during this episode. Like, we only get the glimpse of him at the hospital. No one's like,
hey, this kid's gone missing.
Yeah.
Do we see him at the hospital?
We see him at the hospital in the first episode when we see Connor. After he's
been sucked into the smoke.
After, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so see Connor and we see him kind of at the same time.
What the fuck?
Yeah, it's going on? Real weird. It's
there's
real
a lot
weird.
We don't know. I feel like it's been a while since I watched the show where there's literally, we are getting so many things cutting our knowledge from, like, okay, we saw the start of something, but we read like, okay, Austin got sucked into smoke. Austin's back. There is no explanation for that.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be intentional, but like, it has to be like, here's what happened to me later or something. But yeah.
So do you have any big questions by the end of this episode? I mean, we obviously have big questions, but like, is there anything that really jumps out to you or like any overall last thoughts on this episode?
Not really. Just that I'm keen to see a proper scene between Harlan, Luna, and Garrett.
Yeah.
Like when he's not unconscious.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I'm gunning for.
I am also interested in that. So I wanted to shout out Eternal Ozzy on Twitter, who says, I have Diet Coke in my lungs now. #Wolf Daddy. Thank you. No. Not another Teen Wolf podcast.
I'm sorry.
You're welcome. I'm sorry. You're welcome. That was a gift. And apparently it's not going away.
Okay. Hopefully we won't get too much overkill, but like these animal spirits are really making themselves known.
Yeah, for sure. And so we got a little bit, I'm not sure, I'm sure there's going to be like a proper trailer. Again, we watched a screener for this episode and there was a little bit of a hint toward what we're going to see in episode 3. They didn't show too much in this preview, but it does feel sort of like a Survive the Night kind of episode because we see all four of them together in Garrett's house, kind of like trying to live through the night of the full moon, which I think could make for a very exciting episode.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, we're going to have, I guess we'll have to get them out of Sarah Michelle's clutches first.
Yeah.
But actually seeing them all bonded together, some of them fighting the bonds probably, but actually seeing the pack in action as a group, you know, it's obviously going to be a big difference to what we've seen so far. We've really seen isolated stories so far, and actually seeing them all stuck together is probably when things are going to start to get really interesting in terms of the dynamic between them.
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe we'll learn about Everett and Luna's weird childhood backstory.
I hope so. I have so many questions, and like I'm happy to just kind of go along for the ride, but at the same time I'm like, please just give me the next episode. I am glad this isn't a binge show, just because does let me kind of sink into it a little bit more. But yeah, that is the end of Two Bitten, Two Born, episode 2 of Wolfpack. And we will be back next week for episode 3.
Yeah. So, and if anyone's watching the show and they have any theories, please write in to tell us, because we're a bit lost.
Yeah, we really want to see what you guys think, and see if you caught anything that we didn't.
And before or after this episode comes out, probably after, just after, you can hear us talk with Tyler Lawrence Gray, who plays Harlan. We did a really extensive interview with him. It's going to be a long interview that you can hear, and he's going to be talking about how you got the job, but also teasing a bit about what's coming up for the rest of the season. So you might have heard a little intro on the beginning of the episode with his voice. We did get to sit down with him for a fair amount of time, and that was really fun. So, yeah, that's a cool thing that's coming from Wolfpack, but I can't remember if there was anything off the top of my head he said that would help with our theories at this very second. But
yeah. Unfortunately.
He's given you know, it's all pretty under wraps, but there are a few teasers in there. So look out for that and an article on Subjectified Media about that.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, until next time, we will see you later.
Yeah.
Bye. Bye.
Hey, this is Jeff Davis. You're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, my favorite podcast in the world.